Welcome, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cab Adventure Radio program. Today's September 1st, do you believe it, 2018, and we're here live for the next 2 hours. Once again, we got an action-packed show, all sorts of things going on. But as I always say, I start my day, almost had a rhyme going there, with my Hilltop Sefco Premium Fresh Joe. So you need to go there to Hilltop, say hi to the girls, tell Becky you heard it on the show, and get yourself, they got a special going on, too. They've got regular size, standard size candy bars, Snickers, M&M's, and Twix, 2 for $2.22. And if you know the price of chocolate and how it's going up, that's a pretty good deal. So check it out there. And also, new sponsor, Clem McKeska's Barbecue here in Cameron. Ladies and gentlemen, you need to go there. They've got some great little food there. If you go to Clem McKeska's today and say you heard it on the radio, you get yourself a free drink. Mention you heard the show. You heard them on Aaron's High Cab Adventure Radio program, and you get a free drink. So check it out. They got a great menu. And we'll be talking about them later on in the show as well.
Get some chicken while you're there.
Chicken and catfish, man. Catfish is good, too.
And their turkey. Ooh.
Now you heard it from the board, okay? So you need to go there. Here's what's going on today on the show. Oh, wait. First of all, we're simulcasting here on KMIL 105.1 FM and KRXT 98.5 FM out of Rockdale. All you Rockdaleonians, pick up the phone, say hello, and check us out. Or you can check us out on your smartphones. Go to the particular websites of KMIL or KRXT and plug in that way. If you want to contact us here in the studio, the number is 254-697-6633. Or give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com or just go to the website aaronsgunshop.com. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to ask a favor of y'all. We're at 580 likes on Facebook. I'm getting sick of the 500 mark. Let's break 600. If you're listening to me now and you got your phone in your hand, go there to aaronsgunshop.com. Go to Facebook and like us on Facebook. Spread the word. Share it. Tell everybody to listen. Let's get the numbers up, okay? So check us out on Facebook. Subscribe to the YouTube channel and follow us on Twitter. Now, let me tell you what's coming up on the show today. Once again, we got three more true stories of self-defense from the Concealed Carry magazine. We're going to learn from these stories what to do and what not to do if we ever find ourselves in these situations. My License to Carry attorney segment with Super Attorney Rick Dodd will go over some questions that have come up due to some recent store robberies. What can I do? When can I do it? At night? During the day? Etc., etc. Fresh pursuit? What is it? How far? So on and so forth. A lot of questions that are asked in certain situations particularly. Then, before the end of the first hour, the delicious Janae Goodman. We'll be talking about the amazing apple. Got nutrition benefits, fun facts, and she's going to give some recipes as well. So in her tactical snacking segment, we're going to be talking apples. And I only thought they were good for crunching and tasting good, you know, but there's so much more to an apple. That's pretty good. Then at 11 o'clock, the voice of law enforcement, retired police chief Randy Dixon, the pontificator of practicality, the connoisseur of common sense, the epitome of encyclopedia, an all-around good guy. Randy Dixon is the voice of law enforcement. This week's product spotlight, sponsored by ANC Firearms, is the Polish PPS 43 pistol and 7.62x25. It's an awesome and cool-looking pistol that our very own legal alien, Zoltan Varga, will be describing to us. The Z-Man is very familiar with weapons like these, so I thought, why not have Mon to explain it to us? Then right after that, my special interview will be with Zoltan. Zoli's going to be talking to us about the differences between night vision and thermal scopes. And I'll say it right now, once you do thermal, you won't go back. I'll let Z tell more about it at about 11:30, so check that out. And finally, unfortunately, I didn't tell you this, Trey, Master Cindy Key is still out. Sends her regards, but unfortunately she can't make it, so we'll be playing a replay of Master Cindy Key doing something physical to me for self-defense in the hopes of training you and keeping you safe on the streets, okay? So strap yourselves in, and when we get back from this quick break, we're going to start with true stories. So Trey, take her away, and we'll see you on the other side. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. We are going to start this segment off with our true stories, shaking up the airways a little bit different this morning. So now we're going to be doing our true stories, and I'm taking these from the Concealed Carry magazine, and my faithful board operator, Trey, here is going to help me out. So Trey, we got three stories. Let's start with number one here. Florida mother shoots son who strangled her. I haven't even read these stories yet. So this title is pretty interesting. Florida mother shoots son who strangled her. A Newport Richie man was so irate when his mother woke him for work that he tried to strangle her. The mother broke free and grabbed a gun to protect herself, but the irate son tried to strangle her again. This time, the mother used her pistol to defend herself, shooting her son once in the stomach. Police reported that the mother acted in self-defense when she inflicted the non-life-threatening wound. Sitting here with my mouth open. Like, what do you say to that, man?
It just seems like a reasonable response.
Not the strangling part.
I wonder what his job is that he doesn't want to go to it, you know?
Call work.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, what do you expect? You got a job. It's time to get. She didn't have to wake you up. You can get fired and not have money. Man.
Where's the motherly instincts, you know?
Well, I mean, she was trying to help, but where's the... I mean, did she wake him up by beating him with a broomstick or something?
I don't know. And, you know, I'm not even going to go into this one.
Yeah, it's just...
I'm going to let this one go, man. I'll let the courts figure that one out.
Going pretty far already.
Yeah.
All right, story number two.
No.
Maryland octogenarian?
Octogenarian.
Octogenarian? Like 80-year-old guy. Okay, shoots home invader. A retired 83-year-old Mitchellville teacher heard noises in the night and then heard a loud crashing sound. Realizing his home has been broken into, he stayed in his bedroom to avoid a confrontation. When his bedroom door came crashing open, he used a pistol to fire two shots at the intruder, wounding him and forcing him to flee the house. Responding police found the burglar about two blocks away in front of a neighbor's home. Okay, I got comments on this one. I think that 83-year-old guy knew his limitations. And above that, he was trying to do what everybody tells him, barricade yourself in, call police. But he also had his firearm at the ready. He did what he had to do when it was a last-ditch effort. So I think for his age and from what I can get out of this story, that was pretty appropriate. What do you think, guys?
Well, did it matter his age? I mean, I know that it matters, but an 18-year-old or 23-year-old, I think the same response would have been warranted.
Well, I'm going across saying the 83-year-old guy was more invalid than not.
Yeah, I understand. Right. Circumstances. Force is warranted, no matter who you are.
So,
yeah.
Stamp of approval on that one. Okay.
That's right.
I like the fact that he actually did take the step to say, you know what, it's just stuff. If, you know, they take stuff and leave, we're fine. But when it came time and the door busted down, he's like, okay, it's no longer just stuff. I'm threatened. And of course, 83-year-old guy, I'm threatened. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to sit around and try to fight this guy. I'm just, we're done.
Ladies and gentlemen, I leave it to the audience to decide what you think I would do. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. I think I know what you would do.
Story number three. Armed citizen stops Delaware home invader. A Hartley woman noticed sounds of someone moving around in her house when she woke at 6 one morning. She alerted her boyfriend, who took up a Glock pistol and found a stranger in the living room. On being caught, the man claimed he broke in to avoid the rain. He was held at gunpoint without incident for responding police. On this story, the homeowner, the boyfriend, or whoever it was with the Glock, had very good restraint, or he was very naive to the excuse that the bad guy, the invader, gave, which was a pretty lame excuse, if you ask me.
I'm just picturing the boyfriend walks in, and the dude sit back on the sofa with his feet on the coffee table eating a bowl of cereal. That's what I'm seeing.
Well, the guy did good. He held him at bay there and waited for the police to come, so all went well for the homeowner, I guess. Anyway.
For everybody involved.
Yeah.
Even the perpetrator.
I mean, he didn't die.
Pretty well for him.
Yeah.
It's always best to resolve the situation without shooting. I mean, sometimes it's necessary, but if you can do it without shooting, that's even better.
Absolutely. I mean, he had control. He had the Glock.
There you go. The threat was at that point over, right?
Well, I don't know about over, but it was
or suspended.
Subdued.
Yeah, there you go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's three stories of self-defense out of the Sealed Carry magazine. And I'm not going to let you down this week. I've also got my opinion piece, and it is titled, What's Your Problem? Really? Ladies and gentlemen, it baffles me how one who happens to obtain power or prestige in their particular field and gets recognition for it seems to feel that they know what is best for the rest of us, especially when it comes to our rights as humans and Americans. Some notable and recent examples of this would be professional football players while on the field of play who decided to hijack the airways with their personal beliefs and kneel during the national anthem. How about some of the big movie actors? Please, just shut up and stick to acting. Stop hijacking the Oscars, the Grammys, Emmys, or whatever. Or a college teacher who doesn't like the right that legal people can carry a weapon into school and tapes a 3x3-foot square in the back of her class so the Second Amendment people can stand there. Those are not your personal arenas. They are public domain. Play football. Act. Teach. If you want to share your personal beliefs, then do it on your own time. Write an editorial. Get a radio show. Organize a march. Run for public office. Throwing your personal beliefs down a captured audience's throat is almost criminal, in my opinion. For those of you who want to do this, you risk the possibility of financial repercussions and the loss of fanfare. People like me will stop watching football, will stop going to certain movies, and some teachers will be fired if not sued. I support your right to an opinion. I do not support your method. And although I'm sure I disagree with your opinion, I would fight for your right to keep it. Just do it in a manner that is fair to all. If your cause is good enough, people will listen. If not, then, well, who cares? Okay. So I had this article too. I'm running a little bit long here, and maybe I'll read it during another break. But I had an article about that teacher in the college who actually taped off a 3-foot by 3-foot square in the back of her classroom and said, anybody who carries has to stand in there and you don't get a desk because I feel it's not fair to the other students. Who needs a gun in the classroom? Blah, blah, blah. So she was throwing her personal beliefs on something that had a right for a person who legally had the ability to carry it. And I'll show it in the video here. This article was from, I can't figure out where it's from, but the headline goes, a college instructor comes under fire for segregating concealed carriers in her class. So check it out, and I'll possibly read it a little bit later. Trey, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have the super attorney, Rick Dodd, and we're going to be talking self-defense laws in Texas. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. Again, it's September 1st, 2018. If you want to be part of the show, the number here at the studio is 254-697-6633. And to the left of me, I have the super attorney, Rick Dodd. Rick, it's always a pleasure to have you on board. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing great. You took me away from bird season, but, you know, it's getting a little hot out there anyway.
There you go. You see, I'm doing you a favor.
Right.
Sorry, you can take care of me later.
Keep me hydrated.
Okay.
I'll be doing that this evening.
Rick, you and I, Ross and I, were always discussing in the course of the week as to what we want to get across on airways this Saturday. A situation had happened in Temple. A friend of mine had gotten robbed. He's a store owner. In the course of our discussion, he had asked me some questions. And the same day, I had questions because I found out about that story as to what you can do certain situations. So I want to just reiterate what basically happened in the crime. Go from there and talk. There's two people in the store at night before it closes. One's sweeping the floor. The other one's behind the register. Person comes in, has a gun, grabs the one guy sweeping the floor, grabs him by the head, bends him over, puts a gun to the back of his head, goes behind the counter, and takes the money. He's upset that there's not more of it.
And, always upsets me.
Yeah. And he's starting to leave, and it's about to be over, and it does finally end. But the question that was raised to me was, can I shoot this guy in the back because he scared the hell out of me and took my... And depending on how good a prosecuting attorney is, I would think he could maybe make a few fussy comments. But I think the bottom line is you'd be justified because you're in fear for your life or trying to get your property back and he confines your property. Can you clarify?
Well, starting out, I don't know any prosecuting attorneys in the state of Texas that prosecute that. It would be a very unusual.
But in California, there would be. So let's say the ideology of, oh, I heard this and... That's what they do in Texas. Maybe I can do it here. So in general, though.
Well, in general, okay. But it's really simple. Everybody makes all this self-defense. And that's what we're talking about here, self-defense. Very complicated. But penal code makes it simple. And it does. It says that it's just one single word, justified.
Justified.
Well, I mean, you know, it's...
Well, you're asking the wrong person because he can come in the store, but he's not going to leave the store, okay?
Everybody wants... Well, you know... To get into the self-defense, all the way back to self-defense of the person. Then we got to talk about self-defense, third-person defense of property, and then we have to talk about self-defense of third-person's property. And the reason we do is because each one of those is stacked. In other words, you get down to the bottom, it says, see above. Number three, it says, see one and two when you get to one.
Well, let me throw this in. You said you don't know of any prosecuting attorney that case. What if one said, you know,
well,
then it opens up the door. So let's pretend like we've got somebody who wants to prosecute. What kind of angles would he come on you at?
Well, what he can do is sent to grand jury. If the grand jury would probably no-bill you, but if they went ahead and rebailed you and you had to go to a jury trial, all they have to do is show that you shot someone, accuse you of murder. So then you would have to admit to, yes, I did shoot someone, but it was in self-defense or it was infection someone else's person, my property, or someone else's property. And there are very specific laws on that, but some of the stuff that really gets sticky. And each one of these words means something, but it does mean something different to them. That's why you have 12 people on a jury. All 12 people have three who are guilty of crime or that your defense of self-defense is unjustified. And what you're looking at there is a person, and I'm going to read this, it's in the Penal Code, Section 9.31A. A person is justified in using deadly force against another when and to the degree the actor reasonably believes. The actor reasonably believes the deadly force is imminently another big word, necessary.
But the key word is reasonably, right?
Well, the reasonably believes, yes. Actor reasonably believes the deadly force is imminently necessary to protect the actor against the other's use or attempted use of unlawfully deadly force. So, situation you described, you know, the fella had a pistol. We had a pistol. We know that he was in commission of a robbery, and we're going to get deep into this here in a little bit. Mm-hmm. But all these things come into play, reasonable, what is immediately necessary. I mean... As the guy is leaving, maybe he's stepped through the door already and jumping in a car. Maybe that's a little bit far out, but if he's still just walking in the store, walking towards the door, he still has the pistol in his hand. We know he's a bad actor, and we know he holds guns to people's head, and we know he's a robber. All those things make him a threat. It may be immediately necessary against him, but he is if the actor believes that.
I would definitely believe that actor believed it.
Well, yeah, I would too, and I think all the district attorneys I know would believe that too.
Ross one time said, you probably remember this, said, it's going to sound weird what I'm about to say is, but don't hesitate. So what was happening was, the person who I'm talking about, second-guessing himself, saying, I wanted to do this, but I don't know if I could have. So here you're worried about laws again, whereas you're in this situation and you feel like you're threatened. Bottom line is, get out of the threat because you believe and perceive you're in danger. Perceive and believe that your life's threatened. You believe that your property's being taken, and so just get the job done or don't do it, but don't second-guess yourself, right?
Well, I don't know. The other side of that coin, Matt, may be that if you're sitting there second-guessing yourself, then they're not an immediate threat.
I think a lot of people second-guess themselves because they don't want the deal of the law coming down on them.
Well, but if you have time to second-guess yourself and you have time to think about, well, and funny that y'all were talking about someone coming into the house and sitting on the couch. I literally woke up one morning, fellow drinking some refrigerator, as he said, on the couch. And anyway, he just happened to come
wasn't
in the wrong
family,
place.
Was it? Okay.
It was an apartment complex, and he was looking for a young lady that crossed the pool.
I make that joke quite often when I'm passing by an apartment complex and all the doors look the same. I said, yeah. Man, don't be drunk when you go home.
Yeah.
You'll be going in the wrong house.
He was super drunk. It was pretty obvious.
What was your composure on that?
Well, I just, I had my gun pointing it at him. I felt in control. I didn't feel like there was threat of anything because he was just drunk.
Cheers.
He offered me some wine, though.
Well, that was nice of him.
Anyway, back to what we were talking about. It has to do with the prosecutor presenting his evidence and asserting the self-defense by admitting to his evidence, then letting the jury decide whether your evidence has, and if there's a reasonable doubt as to whether or not you are innocent, should be acquitted, and reasonable doubt that should not have acted in self-defense. And what I'm trying to say is that the prosecutor does have the burden here, have to admit to that burden initially, but they raise the other, there's still the prosecutor's burden, weighed the jury. Yeah. So when you get down to it, there's a whole lot of stuff that gets put what they call a charge. Judge makes the charge with the help of the lawyers involved in the case. That judge may or may not let certain parts in, and if they don't let parts in that the defendant asks for, then first trial. You let those parts in, and the jury affirmatively fashion that you are found guilty, then charged. So all that self-defense stuff gets pretty tricky when you start getting into the court.
I asked a handful of people question of somebody did what this individual did in the store, pointed the gun, had the gun to the head, and shot him basically while he was facing you. Everybody said, absolutely no problems at all. I asked the same question, but changed the one bit of if the robbery was done and the guy's trying to run out of the store and you shoot him in the back, then the person goes, they hesitated. They go, I don't know. I'd still let the guy go because threatening all this kind of stuff. But they start to hesitate because, I don't know, was the threat over, so on and so forth. And the reason I bring that up here, because if you have a handful of people, me asking them that question, what are you going to get in the courtroom? If it ever did go to trial, people say, well, he was being robbed, but then the guy was running out the store, and the store owner shot him in the back 5 times because he was in fear for his life and wanted to get his property back. It muddies the water a little bit. Person's mind who may not be as understanding of situations like that.
Right. Yeah. But we look at the law, though. It depends on the acting. So all the stuff grabbed about holding the gun to his head as he put it down, taking the property. My mind, also, there's the property that he's out with. Deadly force can be used to protect. Have section 9.4 talks about justified using tangible mover property. There was a case where entitled to by retrieving gunpoint money spent on cocaine after the defendant discovered the substance not in fact cocaine. Believe it, here's the guy wanting to put his defense up that, oh man, bad because they didn't give me the cocaine. But 9.42 says that we can use that if we'd be justified by using four sections above and when and to the degree he reasonably believes the jury, and we have two parts that are joined by or. One is to prevent the other's immediate commission of arson, burglary, robbery, aggravated robbery, theft during the nighttime, or criminal mischief nighttime. So you see, that's the one committing an aggravated robbery. So they're reasonably necessary to prevent the robbery. He's in the clear. Runs out the door or window.
Makes you go to sleep easier, doesn't it?
Well, it should. Then it's connected with or. In other words, you don't have the first one. You could have the second one.
You know what it is, Rick? I'm a reasonable guy, okay? I don't raise these questions. The thing is, because I'm in this position of doing radio and doing studying and doing my classwork and training, I see all the problems that come up, especially talking to you guys and being in the legal system. See how things can get muddled and turned around to a poor guy or gal who's trying to defend themselves, and they got to go through the ringer before they can come out and say, yeah, they were justified in doing what they're doing.
Well, this pretty much clarifies it here, doesn't it? I mean, and let's go to B, part B, which is the reasonable now, if the reason believes the deadly force is immediately necessary to, and the second one is to prevent the other who is fleeing immediately after the committing the burglary, robbery, aggravated robbery, theft during the nighttime from escaping with the property. Mm-hmm. And the reason believes that the land or property connected or recovered by any other means or the use of force other than deadly force to recover the land or property would exact or another to a substantial risk. That part two of that. So the fact that the fellow I was talking about him had a gun to his head, any other way of trying bad guy, I would call that.
You for sure are a master at the law. I study this particular part of the law a lot, obvious why. A lot of people out there who have guns and licenses that don't sign the affidavit saying they do know it, but they don't study it. So that's why there's so much question or hesitation or doubt, or they get themselves in a lot more trouble than they should because they don't know it. So this is very good clarification. Ladies and gentlemen, please listen. If you have a story, you can call anonymously. If you're a guy, say you're Joe. If you're a girl, say you're Jane. And but if your name is Joe or Jane, then change it to something else, okay? But if you got a story, a situation that has happened, relay it over the radio here. Let's talk about it. We'll do a true story in real life, and we'll dissect it and see it and talk about it. So give us a call here, 254-697-6633. Be part of the show. We'd love to hear what you got to say.
Yeah, I was going to say that there's another section that talks about section of third. You know, if you're an employee, apparently, possession of that property. Regard to a third party's property, talks about you can and or tangible, movable property, third person. The actor would be justified and actor lawful. Theft of or property.
There's one in there. I'm going to raise a question. I'm going to go ahead.
Or the actor reasonably requested his protection of the land, which, you know, all employed at mothers.
Yeah, but if there's a lot of cases I read in the paper or articles that the store clerk had a gun on him, defended himself and his fellow crew, and then gets suspended or fired because it was against policy. Isn't that a stab in the back?
Well, policy. You know, sometimes these policies are made for good reason. And human factors experts talk about what can and can't happen in situations. So you could potentially expose your fellow workers to more danger pulling out a gun when you shouldn't. So we don't know all the facts about what happens in situations. Policies can be made across the board to protect people. So whether or not should or shouldn't pull a gun, I think you should listen to policy. But on a certain day, when we grabbed, I think it's take care of business. But let me go ahead and finish with this. PB, which is pretty, have a legal duty to protect the third person's land. And this is a good one. Or the third person whose land or property he uses force or deadly force to protect his spouse's property, his parents, or his children's property. Or someone who resides with the actor.
Trey, let's take
or is under the actor's. Those things.
All right, Trey, let's take this call. See who we got. Welcome to the show. This is Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Who we got on the line?
Man, you should say Jay. I'm Jay.
I'm sorry, what? Hey, James, how you doing?
Hey, anyway, a few years ago, huh?
Go ahead.
Go ahead? Oh, okay. A few years ago, my son's vehicle got stolen and all the tools in it. I turned around and took chase. The guy was an expert car racer, let me tell you. He left me behind, but I called on 911 and gave them the direction, the law, in which direction they were going. And nothing, to me, I don't believe they even cared. I don't think they sent out no roadblocks because the roads I went, I never met a law. I told them, and I was getting mad because everyone works hard for what they have. And I made the comment, look, I'm telling you where he's going. I'm in pursuit. If you don't catch him and I catch him, I will shoot him. I almost went to prison over that. Now, that's pretty sorry, yet y'all saying you have the right to shoot for your own property. So that my question is, why was I told that when I'm trying to recover the property, stolen property?
At what point did you get to where they actually said that to you?
When I was giving the directions where he went, and I finally said, look, y'all aren't sending anyone out. I'm on my own, so if I catch him, I will kill him.
Okay, so they told you this via the phone, and said if you do that, you'll get in trouble, so on and so forth?
Right, uh-huh, that I could be arrested.
Well, you could be arrested. Question then would you be charged no bail by a jury? And then if you had a jury trial, would you be convicted? Some of the stuff here talks about imminent threat, talks about being able to recover the property. See, we have a theft at nighttime, right?
Uh-huh. This was late in the evening.
Okay, well, the question might be whether it was nighttime or not, because theft at nighttime special category. Was it a burglary? Did they break into a home or an adjacent building?
They stole a vehicle and took all the tools.
Okay. So if it were theft at nighttime, you would have the right to use deadly force in order to recover the equipment if there were no other reasonable way to recover it. The story about the police not reacting, I think, would be some evidence that there was no other reasonable way.
Hey, like them apples. Speaking of apples, later on in the show.
So you might be a witness, you know, for somebody who gets in that sort of situation, like, hey, there was no other reasonable way because the police weren't reacting.
Hey, James, stay on the line for a second. But, Rick, what about that comment I was making to you about Fresh Pursuit? How does that come into play? Because there's somewhere in the, I can't quote which one it is, but somewhere in these penal codes it says,
under protection of property, section 9.4 talks about how necessary to recover the property if the actor uses the force immediately or in fresh pursuit after the disposition and no claim had by the person who sealed it or the other accomplished it by force, threat, or fraud against the actor. So fraud, I think, pretty much covers that.
So he's in fresh pursuit in a vehicle. How far would we say that goes until...
Well, it's a question of fact. What does fresh mean? You know, fresh for as being in traffic 5 miles an hour that might last 20, 30 minutes might not be fresh for a country gravel road going 60 minutes to an hour. I mean, no, there's no bright line on that, James.
What was the final outcome of that story there, James?
Well, the vehicle was finally recovered, but everything was gone. All the tools and all, the vehicle was, I would say, thrashed. I mean, it was fixable, but, you know, you have to go through the insurance and get everything fixed.
I would say, to answer your initial question, and that is, yeah, an officer can always arrest you. It's just a matter of, will you be convicted of the arrest? So they may have been saying that over the phone just as a cover blanket to maybe slow you down or not get you involved with the person. And if it actually did happen, they'll do what they've got to do. You might possibly get arrested and released and all this kind of stuff to go to trial later or what have you. But in something like that, based on what I know and from what I'm hearing Rick saying, is it shouldn't be a problem.
Shouldn't be, because you use deadly force to protect your children's property. Part of the section.
Even though that was during the day, late evening?
Well, again, I clarified a while ago, it might be a question of fact whether that was nighttime or not.
Okay.
Now explain the differences during the daytime.
It talks about a theft during the nighttime under section 9.42. It to prevent the other's imminent commission of an arson, burglary, robbery, aggravated robbery, theft during nighttime, or criminal mischief during the nighttime. See, arson, burglary, robbery, and aggravated robbery means they were using a pistol some night or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So do that during the daytime, but just theft, criminal mischief.
Can you explain why? I know why, but can you explain in a manner that's clear, simple, why is the difference between the two?
Well, because nighttime is... raises the risk, and people are lurking around out there seeing stuff at nighttime.
All right, James, I hope we answered your question.
I don't really understand the big difference. Apparently, there is one. You know, when you start talking about the twilight hours, I assume the weatherman knows what time it gets night.
Well, the paper you have in front of us are the rules of the game, so if we don't play by the rules, we get in trouble. So that's why we got to know the rules so we can stay within the boundaries of the rules and not get in much trouble.
They did ask me, though, if I had a gun, and of course I did.
And you're well trained, right? You came to my range and my courses and did a lot of practice, right?
Well, I live in another county, but I was thinking that a while ago. I said, you know, when you're younger, you think, well, why do I really need to do that? But, you know, sitting here working while I'm working at about 30 minutes ago, I thought, you know, I ought to come to that course just for the heck of it. I might learn something that I don't know.
Well, Saturday, next Saturday, 2 o'clock. I'll see you there, James.
Where is your courses at exactly?
I'm sorry, sir. Say again.
Where are your courses at exactly?
I'm in Cameron. If you go to aaronsgunshop.com, you can check it out. I don't really have the time right now to explain it, but you can call me up later.
Okay. Alrighty.
No problem.
All right, James. Thanks for the call.
Thank
Anybody
you.
Else has got a call, please give us a call.
That was a great story, great learning tool. So, Rick, why don't you keep going? Maybe somebody else will call up with something else.
Well, that's really about it when you start talking about protecting your property, but also they've got a clause in there. If somebody breaks into your habitation, you don't have to ask a lot of questions. That is immediate threat. If somebody's burglarizing your habitation, basically means they're coming into your home without permission. A lot of times out and they won't get out.
Would that include the story of you with the wine guy?
Yeah.
Okay, but now why didn't you shoot?
I didn't want to get blood all over my couch. I mean, it seemed like he was a big threat.
Yeah, because I know your demeanor, okay? You're kind of calm, cool, and collected. Me, on the other hand, I take control. Not that you don't. I'm a more aggressive, take control of the situation.
Yeah, you'd have been up all night cleaning up blood.
No, I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't. Because in my class, I'm telling you, the more trained you are, the more options you have, the more time you have. The more time you have, the more options you have. So the better skilled at arms you are, the better mindset that you have, you're able to make better decisions. So if somebody breaks into my house, since I do have that skill level, I'll say, comply or die. You know, it's one of those two.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I felt pretty confident. I had the gun in my hand. I had practiced. I could have dotted the I if I needed to. You know, if he'd have whipped something out, I could have popped him. I didn't feel like he...
I got leather. I don't know if that's good
for... Let me tell you a quick story about some of the cases. Here's one where the defendant claimed that while he was discovered with a decedent son, armed with a rifle, appeared around the corner, barn in a shooting, immediately fired on the defendant, shot. Here we have young man who gets shot. Defendant who so did not have a right to reference to property in question, father. He had no right to assault the father's life. Court should have charged that it didn't made an attack on defendant as claim, not in defense on things. In other words, didn't have the right to protect the property. Question no to that defense. Because here was someone coming around the corner. So it does get complex sometimes.
What determines what kind of case law goes into the books that you study?
Generally, highest appellant court in Texas do go to appeals first, not affirmed. I can appeal. Those courts, the high courts like the Texas court, have the right to review or not review. If you don't review it, then we have to rely on them. So, for instance, the one I just talked about was high court in Texas.
If you go to a court like that and have a case resolved using some of this case law, did that case get into the book? It doesn't, because you utilize some of the cases in this book, all of that case.
Well, of course, sense. Now we don't really use all of those cases. Some say they're not published, but they're published as authority in front of Supreme Court case, Fields case, not me.
How does an opinion come in? How does that work?
Well, the judge looks at this. Here we are in court, defending a man who shot around the corner, tech property. So I had the right to charge the charge. Questions. Those questions are not in there that I've asked for. Objected to the charge. The judge is presenting it. And I have what we call error. So then when I appeal, I have an opportunity to turn that convert upon. I might be able then to get the judge or the old egg. Correct stuff in the chart. Yeah, there was not a right to sell.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm so impressed with these guys, Ross and Rick, because they retain in their brains and ask a question, bam, it comes out, this information. It's incredible. Rick, tell everybody how they can get a hold of you, because we're just about out of time here.
Well, certainly you can contact us at respectforyou.com. Civil law, and one thing to understand about that is all of these rules have to do with criminal law, also apply to civil law. In other words, do something wrong, if you might not be criminal, but is still negligent or negligent homicide or something like that, responsible for damages in a civil sense. The only difference would be that the burden of proof for a civil matter is ponderance of the evidence, whereas in a criminal, it's beyond a reasonable doubt, which higher burden of proof for the prosecutor in a criminal case. And the reason is because you have freedom at risk. That's
right,
the most valuable thing, where, you know, property is not.
Criminal is prison time, civil is fine.
Yeah. Okay. So respectforyou.com, where I'm at. If you've been wronged, hurt, harmed by someone else, call. A lot of stuff with asbestos answers. I'm working on non-Hodgkin's lymphoma with regard to Roundup, a fair amount of truck wrecks, and respectforyou.com.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you very much for coming on.
Right here.
Trey, let's take a quick commercial break, and we'll come back, and I got some dates to tell you all about, so we'll see you in about 30 seconds to a minute. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. Again, September 1st, 2018. And before we get the delicious Janae Goodman on here, I wanted to talk to you about some updates. Obviously, September 3rd, Monday, is Labor Day. Specials that all these holidays are anymore. September 7th, the first Friday of the month at Aaron's Gun Shop, is two for night. Two people come, one shoots for free. The range time is free. September 8th, Saturday, the day after, is the next LTC class, license to carry class, starts at 2 o'clock. Course fee for a new person is $60. If you already have a license and you just want to go over it again, it's $40. Give me a call or an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. Let me know you want to lock in. There's not many spots left, so hurry. September 14th, the second Friday of the month, is our next round robin. Keep pounding this one. If you have a license to carry, and even if you don't, it's a great competition for you to learn how to utilize your weapon under stress. Time, accuracy, familiarity, types of deals to get you more proficient with how to shoot a handgun under stress. End up winning, you get a really good prize. Come on out the second Friday of the month to do the round robin. Starts 7. I need you there by 6:30. Done in about an hour. September 21st, the third Friday of the month, is ladies' night. You identify as a woman. If you are a woman, you get free range time at the range there. So a lot more ladies are coming out. having a good time. So the third Friday. So the first Friday is two for a night. Second Friday is round robin. Third Friday is ladies' night. Seminars, if you got a group of people who want to learn some extra training, do some extra training, either home defense, personal security, rifle, shotgun, pistol, whatever. If you get five or more, we'll set up a class date for you. And ladies and gentlemen, the show here that we have on the air, more and more people are listening and liking it. But, you know, it costs a bunch of money to keep it on the air. So if you have a business or if you know somebody who does, you'd like to be a sponsor to the program, greatly appreciated, and you've got a large listening base. So give me a call at the shop there or give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com, and we can tell you all the details about it. Once again, don't forget, we got a new one on, Clem McKeska's Barbecue here in Cameron. Great burgers, great catfish, barbecue, the works. And don't forget, if you say, hey, I heard your new sponsor, heard it on Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program, you get a free drink today. Check it out and tell them where you heard it from and let them know, okay? All right. Take a radio waves to the delicious Janae Goodman. She's going to be talking apples, recipes, nutrition values, and all sorts of... Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. Again, September 1st, 2018. We're in our product spotlight segment right now. And to the left of me, I have our in-house legal alien, Zoltan Vargan. We forgot to play his music. What's the immigrant song? Led Zeppelin. Oh. We'll do that on the outgo, okay? Get it ready for the outgo. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Zoli here. First, Zoli, welcome to the show again. How you doing?
Thank you.
Make sure we get a good mic on him. And Zoli, it's always a pleasure to get you back in the studio. And ladies and gentlemen, the reason I wanted him in specifically for this product spotlight is anything Soviet bloc type of weapons, because Zoli comes from Hungary. He's probably played with these, has good history of it. We're talking about the Polish push rifle, the PPS, and this particular one's PPSC pistol in 7.62x25. And we're sponsored here in this segment by ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer. And let me tell you about ANC real quick. Arch Kuntz is the owner. He's an awesome guy. He's got a great shop, got a great crew out there. He's got Clint, Mike, Dennis. They got great products, pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, accessories, reloading equipment, the works. And if they don't have it, they'll order it for you. And this one here, this is an order, a special order thing, which is not a problem to get. But we're going to be talking about this Polish rifle, and I wanted Zoli to come in and talk about it. He's got some good knowledge on it. And so, Zoli, go ahead and say hi. Tell everybody what you got. Let's talk about this Polish pistol here. And as you're talking about it, too, show in the video here, because I'll be posting the video probably on Tuesday.
Hi, everybody. We are talking about today about this PPS-43C. It's a redesigned model of the original Soviet PPS-42.
And while he's talking, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to go to my website, aaronsgunshop.com, and go to the Facebook page, you'll see the short video of me holding it so you can see it right now. Go ahead.
And story behind the original weapon during the Second World War, when the Germans are surrounded and started the siege of Leningrad, the people and the defenders needed a weapon, but they can use it, but they didn't have too much materials, so... Based on Sudayev's original PPS-42, they designed a simpler, easier version of the gun, but is using the same blowback open bolt mechanics as the 42. But technically, these weapons were made in the machine shops and back in old Ivan's garage and shed.
It's like stamped steel, right?
Yeah. It's a really simple, the simplest design, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And technically, one of these guns producing time was 2.7 hours.
That's incredible.
And technically, everybody who just have a little bit of knowledge about machinery or how to work with metal, they can build them from scraps in or stuff they buy from the hardware store.
Yeah, big difference between stamped metal and milled metal. I mean, you got a block of metal and you're milling it out. This one here is a piece of flat metal, stamping into position, boom. A couple of rivets, you're good, right?
Yes. So this is not the real original version. It's a remodeled by the Polish. It has a hammer in it, but in the original version it didn't have. It was a fixed firing pin directly in the bolt. That's why they used the open bolt mechanism.
We were just talking about that, yeah.
And... ammunition, the 7.62x25, was designed for the Nagant pistols and also for the TT Tokarev pistols.
Right, and we've got one. I should have brought that one in too, but that's an awesome pistol too.
Yeah. This gun, biggest advantage of it, it was like cheap to produce. They could produce anywhere. It's really durable and handling any kind of weather or weather conditions, get dirty. Russian, so it.
Let me make a clarification on this particular one. ladies and gentlemen, because the barrel is less than 16 inches, this originally came with a folding stock. So technically, it would be considered a short barrel rifle. To avoid that problem of getting it tax stamped, they had it, before it got into country, they had it, the folding stock folded over and then welded into place. But you can't see the welds are internal here on this push button that releases it. And so it's a fixed stock in the closed position, which makes it a pistol. So if you were to buy this is actually a pistol. And I sell Harp holsters. And if you go to my website, aaronsgunshop.com, you can look at the holster and the little video about a Harp holster. You technically, if you wanted to, carry this down the street as long as it's in a holster. So that's why you'd have to buy it as a pistol.
Also, after the World War the Russians came up with they had still the PPS-42s, what had the wooden stock and the big drum magazines. But they couldn't really use that for like airborne units or mechanized infantry.
Right.
And tank crew. So everybody who needed a smaller weapon but still have a big firepower, they equipped with this particular gun because of the folding stock and the more compact design.
Necessity, the mother of invention. That's great. So it's ANC Firearms, ladies and gentlemen. If you don't have one of these, and let me pick this up here. I want to show, make sure you see it in the video pretty clear. If you don't have one of these, you need to get one. And they're a heck of a lot of fun, especially in conjunction with the TT-33 pistol, a Polish pistol, and the Russian one is a different nomenclature, but takes the same cartridges. What's nice about it, though, at the high velocity that it's got a nice chunk of lead to it going about 1,300 feet per second. It's a good knockdown round in a handgun, and you get a little bit more power behind it with this longer barrel. You got yourself a fun little weapon to go hunting with or home defense or whatever you need, small, compact, and ANC Firearms can get it for you. So check it out. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the Facebook page and look at the quick video of it. And then call ANC Firearms at 254-983-4417. Tell them you heard about it on there. And they don't have one in stock, but they can get it for you. And it won't be that much money. You'd be surprised at the price on it. They're pretty cheap considering what you're getting. And it's 254-983-4417, ANC Firearms. Tell them you heard it on the radio. You want to get the Polish Push, the PPSC, lowercase C, 43, 7.62x25 pistol. And I believe when you get it, it usually comes with like 3 mags, 30-round mags, and it's just a lot of fun to shoot. And I have found it to be very accurate, and when you shoot it, you don't even feel it firing because the weight of the weapon in comparison to the recoil, it's not there. So it's a fun gun to shoot. All right, so check them out, ANC Firearms, and thanks again for Arch supporting the show, sponsoring this segment, 254-983-4417. Trey, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to have Zoli again, and we're going to be talking about night vision versus thermal types of scopes. And like I said before, once you go thermal, you're not going to go back. And Z, I'm sure, has got some good information. So see you on the other side. Everybody, the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. That is our intro music for our in-house legal alien, Zoltan Varga. Zoli, welcome back again. How you doing, buddy? That's good. Glad to see you in 5 minutes. You haven't changed. Okay. Yeah. Z, I got you on because I was thinking, hey, man, let me get Zoli on. I want to talk about night vision thermal scopes. And I just got my American Rifleman magazine in, and sure enough, there's an article there. I mean, total coincidence. I said, okay, that's meant to be. So I know you're very familiar with both of them, and so let's talk about it. Ladies and gentlemen, I've had them both, okay? And when you get one, it's great, but when you get the thermal, it's even better. So, Zoli, the show is yours. I'll interrupt when I think I got a question or something, but tell everybody what the deal is, and make sure we got you on the mic here. I want everybody to hear you loud and clear. See that pretty face, too. Go ahead.
about night visions, you can break up two groups, active and passive night. Active night visions needed a lightning light, IRB.
Red, huh?
Passive ones, sensitive core in them, what makes that the, all the external lights, stars and everything, and that additional light to create a clear image.
Is that a generation difference?
No.
Okay.
That's just working different. Okay. Generation difference. First, in 1944, Germans used, they called the Vampire system. It was like a backpack-sized battery and like a big purse or
satchel of some sort,
sort of size scope.
Oh, okay.
On assault rifles, and they also had the technology put it on the Panther tanks, and that was the first ever night vision.
That must have been a major advancement back then. My gosh, see,
it was. U.S. forces experienced that in the Ardennes.
I'll bet. Okay.
And after that, in the 50s, the technology started to using more precise and more smaller equipment, so they could manufacture different kind of cores. First generation night vision born, and used by U.S. force. Korean, they weren't, with today's experience and today's technology, they weren't like great things, but they were...
Than you had before. Anything. You had nothing before, right?
Yes. And their detection range was like up to 100, 150 yards.
That's a major difference when somebody else doesn't have the same equipment.
Yeah. After that, they changed the core technology, and for the second generations, made it more more sensitive. And that was generation two, when the detection range was like about 200, 250. Generation three can go with the detection range up to 500 yards. And what you see is there are two major types, the infrared cores in it, what has this green picture, and they have the white phosphorus, what is a gray and gray and white.
Right, I know what you're talking about.
They are making like really good pictures, especially the new ones, and there are also the digital, called the digital night visions, what technically a day and night scope, and it works different. It's not using anymore the core. You make the picture, but use all the electronics and electronic image technology.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I got a pair of night vision binoculars, Gen 1, and I can go out to about 150 yards, focus it in, and it's not bad, man. It's pretty good for a Gen 1. I've seen Gen 3s, major difference. The price, of course, has increased dramatically. It had something to do with the tubes, I believe. Some of these things were surplus tubes from the military, if I read it correctly, that they were putting into these commercial items, but you get black spots, and some of them you would need infrared, like you were talking about, which takes a lot more power, more battery power. But it doesn't, the thing about it was it didn't penetrate. You would see, like, let's say you were looking at a bush, you could see the bush,
but nothing behind it.
Nothing behind it.
And also, you can, you cannot use without a special lens or a special filter a night vision, an electronic night vision, not a digital ones, but. Electronic, if you bring it out in daytime, done. And all those black spots you are talking about is, imagine like a round glass tube with millions of little holes in it, electrons going and traveling. Okay. And those black spots are every single little tube groups, what they burnt out because of the too much light.
Too much light, okay. So if you, especially if you're using surplus, you've got the wear and tear of surplus, and then if you're not careful what you're doing, you're going to cause a whole bunch of black spots in there, and it'll hinder your vision.
Or if somebody just brings up a spotlight on you, it can damage your whole unit.
Well, the other thing, too, is, well, first of all, the night vision, like you just mentioned, has lens covers with pinholes through them. Yeah. So you could use it during the day, but like you said, if it's a super bright day, it still can have a tendency to burn and put black marks on your sight. But at nighttime, once you have the lenses open for full view, if you look at bright objects like street lamps or anything bright, that could potentially do some damage to your scope too, right? So you have to be careful. A night vision's great. Now, look, I've gotten some night vision binoculars for $250, and they work great for just the perimeter of my area. It works fantastic. If you want to go hunting and you want to get a further distance, you can spend more money, so on and so forth, et cetera, when it comes to night vision.
Yeah, that's why night vision are, you can buy a digital night vision for around $500 now. But these are like rifle scopes.
How do you go from a tube to digital and still be night vision? Any idea?
I don't really know the technology behind, and what I know, it's, I cannot really translate it.
Okay.
But
because you had mentioned that it doesn't affect you with black spots, so I'm wondering if you're using the tubes, but it's transferring over to an electrical picture.
Technically, the electronical night vision have these tubes, and it has a really sensitive light-sensitive film in them, and what the light travels in photons, when they hit this film, it transfers the photons to electrons. Digital, the whole thing is made by...
What's more amazing to me is the person who figured that out.
Yep.
You know, you got this device, and it's fantastic. It's like, who's the guy in the closet who thought this all out? You know, I think the TV was... invented by a guy on a tractor cutting rows of wheat or corn or something. He said, hey, I can put this on a tube and you see, blah, blah, blah. But that's a different story. Okay. How do we make the jump now to thermal?
Well, let's go with the price. Because as you said,
Sit down when you hear this.
As you said, you bought your night vision goggles, $250?
$250, yeah.
You can buy, and you can go up, that's the Gen 1. Gen 3 starts from about $3,500 up to $6,000, or the most modern ones are like, I saw on the internet for $13,000.
And that's just night vision.
Yeah.
Okay, now when you understand the difference between the two, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to see why night vision. Why would I do night vision? But that's my personal opinion. Go ahead.
Many people think that night vision has better picture than a thermoscope.
Not the scopes we got, buddy. Man, I'm telling you, the scopes we got are incredible.
Yeah.
And the price was not that much.
I'm in a couple hunting forums on Facebook, and one of them is about just specifically coyote hunting. And their most point of argument on the side of the night vision that they can identify more a coyote from domestic dog because it makes more detailed pictures.
Well, maybe I don't know because I haven't owned a $3,500 night vision one, but I have owned a high price in thermals. So maybe there's an argument there.
Yeah. And about the thermoscopes, it's using a different wavelength than the night visions. And technically what it does picks up all these heat signatures, but you go out in daytime and you see it's really hot, you can see the air is waving.
That's right.
These are the waves that the thermal picks up. And big advantage of the thermal, you can use daytime, nighttime, doesn't matter. Any kind of light condition. And baseline of the thermals, like little handheld monocular thermals, you can buy for $100 or something like that. You can buy a really good quality thermal, what we have. I bought mine for right. you paid about the same,
yeah.
And they go, of course, up to the roof, but the detection range of our particular scope is over a mile. And with practice, you can 100% identify targets up to 400 yards. Tell that's a hog, that's a coyote, or a cow, or mm-hmm. a goat, or something. But when you are like me out hunting and looking on a big cornfield or anywhere, what is the major distance, and I see lots of little white or black heat dots, I know there's something. So right. I can go closer, and it's worse to walk
well,
there.
Let's clarify. Let's say you got some tall grass. Using night vision, you'll miss them.
Yeah.
Okay? But if you got tall grass and you got hogs just below the grass line, you're going to see heat signatures.
Yes.
And so you can circle around, sneak up on, identify, you know there's something there, and you can tell by the basic size of the heat signature what it is in general. You can say, is it a friend or foe, and make your decision. But with night vision, you're limited to what you can see only in front of obstacles.
Yes.
And so if you're a serious hunter and you want to see what I liked about it, I did this for one reason. I had night vision when I was hunting hogs, and I knew they were in the bush. But it's like, where are you going, man? It's nighttime. Where are you going? And I'm stuck. It's like, I know you're there, but I don't know which way you're going. So I got to try to figure it out. With the thermals, I'm penetrating the bush about 15 to 20 yards. And it says, okay, there you are. I can track you now and get my kill. So that was one of the major sells for me when it came to thermal. And they got all sorts of thermal. They got they're really streamlined now. Battery packs to go with them.
Video. The newer version and a little bit more. They are go about $4,000 to $48,000 from brand we have. It has the built-in battery pack and the built-in video recorder. Mm-hmm. Then you can actually videotape your hunt with sound and everything
right.
and put it on Facebook.
What I liked about the one I've got now is the screen inside the screen.
Yeah.
Clarify that. Explain it in detail if you can. It magnifies what you're seeing, I think.
Technically, the picture-in-picture function makes you have a whole big screen, and picture-in-picture gives you a bigger magnification on your crosshair.
Right.
But like the thermal, technically, what I have is from 2.2 up to 12 by 12 magnification. But if I put the screen on screen, and that's what I use mostly, I can scan a whole bigger area and find what I want to shoot. And I don't need to adjust anything.
Exactly. Let me say that again, because You're looking through the screen, like you said, and you got your crosshairs through a typical scope. But on the about the top portion, the 12 o'clock position, you got a smaller square, and it's magnifying already, like Zoli said, your crosshair. And let's say you got the crosshair on an animal. And instead of getting the crosshair on an animal and then zooming into it, picture in picture, the second picture has the zoom in already of that animal. So like Zoli's saying, you're scanning real quick, object identified. All of a sudden, you want to take the shot and you want a precision shot on the neck, shoulder, whatever. That secondary screen enables you to see it a lot quicker. And then all you got to do is look at the second screen to take your shot as compared to moving it back down and looking at each other's other screen.
Also, thermals can remember guns. Like if you have three different kind of gun or you're using three different kind of ammunition, you can put your thermal on one gun, zero it in, save it, and when you put it on another gun, you don't need to pass your zero. You just save the new zero in the next slot, and you can put back and forth thermal with the guns without worrying about too much difference.
Let's say you got three ARs. Put them on three different Rs, three ARs that have different calibers. And you've got your Picatinny rails numbered. It should be about the same. If you just take it off, put it back on your designated numbers on the Picatinny rails, you shouldn't have to worry about re-zeroing it at all.
Yes. Okay. But you have to use the same torque to fix up the...
That's right, yeah. Wouldn't a quick detach take care of that?
It can, but...
I think they say you got plus or minus 5 MOA.
0.5.
Okay. Basically, what we're talking...
5 MOA is a lot. Yeah, it's 5 inches and 100 yards.
Right. What we're talking about is if you screw them on, if you'll notice you put scopes on and you screw them on with your rings or whatever mounting mechanism you have, depending on the torque will depend on how much it's going to pull your scope. Whereas on a quick release, the scope's put on top of your quick release, and then the quick release is set on the weapon and then locked down. And when you lock it down, it should put it generally in the same spot within a certain MOA. Okay.
But a really good quick release mounts, what is really quality, and they are...
expensive.
$200-$500.
But they're expensive for a reason, because they work. Yeah. I have one of those expensive ones, and it seems to work pretty good. Okay. All right, so the clock's ticking. What else can we talk about? Anything else on that? There's definitely different brands, and within each brand, there are different levels. Can you explain the, I don't know the terminology, when you're moving the weapon, how quickly it processes, or the processor in it?
Yeah, it's called the refreshing.
Yeah, okay.
And it's in the thermal, it's measured in hertz, megahertz. The higher number you have, that's the faster your scope is assessing the new pictures.
Give an example. So if I'm looking at something on the left side of the field and I'm going to transfer my scope, I'm going sweeping to the right, what does that actually mean to somebody who's looking through the scope?
Well, technically, it's like when you try to aim on a moving vehicle or a moving target, it's you have to put it in forward. Like when you're scanning and you have a low refreshing time, the target picture won't move that fast.
Right. So you have to move, wait, let it refresh, and then you're on live.
Not that drastically, but if you're shooting a moving target, like your Snoopy pack of hogs and you want multiple kills, then you have to figure out technically, and that's experience, how much do you have to aim in front, not just because of the moving, but also you have to count a little bit because of the refreshing time.
I may be catching you off guard here, but can't we shut that mechanism off? And if you shut that mechanism off where it refreshes itself, how would that work when you're actually off position? Because I remember reading that in the manual, and I never do it. I always have it refreshed, but I was always wondering if you shut it off, how does that affect you?
Oh, no. That refreshing is it's more because of the quality of the image. And like if you see on a big heat spot like a campfire or like a low heat spot, and that makes the picture side blurry. Freshing you're talking about, but we have the manual, the automatic, and the it's refreshing the picture to make the sight constantly aim quality of image.
Image, okay. All right, well, look, ladies and gentlemen, we're running out of time, and I got to get Master Key on here pretty quick. But Zoli, that's a really good and quick, brief explanation between the two. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you're looking to get night vision or thermal, this is a video you might want to review come Tuesday or so, and you can pick up and take some notes on a couple things you might want to look for, and then start scanning on the internet or whatever. Actually, go to ANC Firearms, and they can square you away too. But if you're gonna go night vision or thermal, and you got it, I'd go thermal. That's my personal opinion, because you can just do a lot more with it. Okay. Zoli, thanks for coming on. I appreciate you always coming on the show. Trey, let's take a quick break unless you've got Cindy set up. All right, let's set her to go. How long is it? Okay, I'll probably see you on the backside. We'll talk just a couple notes.
Rip, of course.
Of course. But, I mean, if somebody was to try to grab you, of course, you want to get your block. I can come up here to his jaw and do a heel palm, and then I have my eye gouge, and I can rip. I can do another heel palm to his solar plexus. I can heel palm to the groin, and after that I will...
Don't hurt your hand doing that.
Oh, all right. You wish. But and honestly, he's wearing the cowboy pants, which are tight, which FYI for you guys, that's harder for me to get a hold of if I'm going to attack you there to grab than those baggy pants that's that right, I yeah. see a lot of people wearing. Because if you have those baggy pants on, guys, I can get whatever I want. It's just all loose. I can get.
So package up your package.
Package it up. Package it up. Cowboy pants are better. So all again, right. I'm going to repeat that. He comes to grab. I'm going to do my basic outside soft block because I don't want to throw his arms out because then he's going to come back at me really fast. This is just like, oh, hey, I'm scared. And I come up with that heel palm, get his eyes. I can rip down, heel palm to the solar plexus. I can heel palm up to those ribs, heel palm to the groin and do a rip. If he tries to hit me here again, heel palm on that jaw. And now I have my elbow set up, which elbows are devastating.
That's a lickety-split. The way you're doing it, it's just like, 1, 2, 3, it's done, right?
It's done. It's done. I can do it fast.
Let's try it the other way, Ms. Kiss, right. So that when they see it on the film, we'll...
All right. Okay. So one is to get your block, get your heel palm, get your rip, boom, another heel palm to the solar plexus. And now my elbows are set up, so I can come in even to here, 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 knife hand, groin. Oh, there's so many things that can come after.
Sounds great. Got about a minute left. Why don't you tell everybody what you got going on, how they can get a hold of you?
Well, right now, the Rockdale ISD is sponsoring a self-defense class that I'm going to do. So if anybody has kids in iTigers, whether it's elementary or junior high or high school, if you have a child that has done iTiger program, you get to do the self-defense class for free, and it starts on April 9th at 6 o'clock. It's a Monday. So come on out and learn some basic self-defense. It's going to go on for, if we get enough people in it, it'll go on for 4 or 5 weeks. If not, then we're going to do that one class, and if not enough show up, then I'm going to be done.
Look, you got an opportunity. Take advantage of it here. Ms. Key, tell them one more time, because we've got about 30 seconds left, okay. Just to reiterate.
Okay, it's going to be at the Rockdale Junior High at 6 o'clock, April 9th, and any iTiger parent or grandparent or guardian of an iTiger child that goes does that after school program at elementary, junior high, or high school, you are allowed to do that class, and it's free. It's not going to cost you anything. So take advantage of it and learn some basic self-defense and have some fun too.
And how can they get a hold of you?
I'm at 254-721-2775, and I have Facebook.
Really?
That's
awesome.
All right.
Okay. That's awesome.
Finish it.
You're live. I just wanted to give you a couple of final notes. Don't forget, September 8th is the next LTC class, and it's $60 for a new person. Starts at 2 o'clock, and if you've got a license already and you want to refresh, it's $40. Give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. Don't forget, also, the Clem McKeska is here in Cameron, inside of the Hilltop CEFCO, right next door to the KMIL studios. Go in there and say, hey, heard you on the radio, and tell them, I'd like to get my free drink, please. Just make sure you let them know. And support them as much as you can. Support all of our sponsors, because remember, it's a circle of life. You support them, they support me, I stay on the air, and hopefully everybody enjoys and benefits from it, okay? So ladies and gentlemen, I'll tell you what, here's what we're going to do, Trey. We're going to sign off. I want to say, keep your powder dry, God bless, and until next week, stay out of trouble.